Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Welcome back, folks. Joining us is Mike Petrelli, president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute and visiting fellow from the Hoover Institution, about a recent longitudinal study that was released looking at the link between race, socioeconomic status, and achievement gaps in school. Mike wrote the foreword to this report by the Thomas B. Fordham Group, comparing the results of a study 20 years ago to a study most recently released. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Mike, I think I got that right. I'm not sure, but there's a lot of information in this, a lot of information in this report.
You said it well. You said it very well. Yes.
So obviously, 20 years ago, back in 2004, you talk about these economists, Roland Fryer and Stephen Levitt, publishing a seminal paper on understanding the black-white test score gap in the first 2 years of school. And then you guys were curious about where do we stand today, looking back at what the findings were there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, this paper has largely been forgotten, and it shouldn't be, because it's super important and interesting, has a lot of relevance to all the debates we have, not just about education, but about race in America and the challenge of closing gaps, the critical race theory debate, everything. That paper 20 years ago, what it found is that if you control for just a small number of variables, you could basically close the racial achievement gap. The test score gap that kids have that we see when they enter school. And that gap is enormous. I mean, we've known forever that white and Asian students on one hand are outscoring black and Hispanic students on the other and by wide margins. And that's not something you just see after kids have been in school a long time. You see it when they enter school. So you can interpret then that it has a lot to do with what happens to kids before they get to school in those 0 to 5 years. What Fryer and Levitt were able to do is they said, look, if you control for some things, including household income, the mother's education level, a few other variables related to that socioeconomic status, but also some health things like was your mom a teenage mother? What was your birth weight, which is an indication of whether maybe you were getting what you needed when you were prenatal. You control for all those things, and you can make the racial achievement gap disappear. And what that means to me is that when we're looking at these gaps, it's really not about race. You know, we see it because we see race, but it's really about the underlying socioeconomic conditions. Now, it's still tragic. I mean, especially when you look at the black-white gap, we know that black children growing up in America are still dramatically more likely to be growing up in poverty, growing up in persistent poverty, growing up in single-parent homes, growing up in homes that have things like lead paint that hurts their development, you know, being born with low birth weight because they're not getting, their mothers aren't getting what they need before they're born. So all of that, but that is why we're seeing these achievement gaps. It really has nothing to do with race per se. It has to do with poverty and socioeconomic status and all the rest. That's when kids enter school. However, once they start moving their way through school, through elementary school, we actually see the black-white gap get larger. We found that 20 years ago, and sadly, we still find that today. And that may be one of the most important findings. What that means is that our schools, instead of narrowing achievement gaps, are actually widening them. And that is likely because black students continue to have less access to good schools than white students, even white kids with the very same, say, income or mother's education level. There's still a great amount of inequality. Frankly put, we're still struggling to provide great schools to a lot of poor black students across the country.
Mike, what struck me is if we know that they're coming in the entry level behind in reading, and reading is, you know, the foundation for everything. I mean, it's hard to understand math. It's hard to understand science if you don't master reading. And I've asked this of our education secretary in the state of Louisiana. Why don't, and we know that the public school system, at least in state, is where the lion's share of those that fall low on the scale of that socioeconomic status. Why would we not alter the manner in which we are presenting material and just spend more time early onset on reading and writing and forget about some of those other things early onset? Because I'm told that folks can catch up when they've mastered, or not mastered, but they've improved their reading capabilities and their writing capabilities, and a lot of it they can catch up later, like spelling. I mean, you know, we come in and we're doing flashcards of spelling. It's like, what the hell? You can pick that up in the fourth grade or fifth grade and just do it phonetically. Who cares if you have the A in the right place, you know, early onset?
Yes and no, Newell. I mean, I understand the impulse, but you got to be careful with a few things. And that's because we know when it comes to reading, other than learning how to decode the language, which is essential, it's that first step. How do you sound out those letters into a word? The reason a lot of kids are struggling with reading is they have very limited vocabularies. So they sound out Tyrannosaurus Rex, but they've never heard about that because they've never, you know, been read to about dinosaurs or seen. So what you don't want to do is have a system where you save things like science and history until later, because it's actually the case that the earlier we teach things like science and history, I mean, the basics for 5, 6, 7-year-olds, the bigger their vocabularies get, the better their reading comprehension is. So you just got to make sure that you see that kind of teaching and that kind of content as part of teaching reading. Now, can you wait on some of the other stuff? Sure. It's also, we have found that some kids just need more time. And that's why you see some of these policies in states around the country where there's some kind of third grade reading guarantee that says, hey, if you get to the third grade, you're still not, you haven't learned to master, especially fluently reading, decoding, then let's give the kid an extra year and extra tutoring, extra supports until they master it. Don't push them through and push them along because they'll never catch up. And they're just going to fall further and further behind.
I think parents are a lot to blame. I mean, I remember going through that, you know, that choice. And there's a stigma, right, when you start with your group of kids and you're working your way through through school and you get to a certain point and, you know, you have to make this decision and you're wondering whether or not it's the right thing because of the stigma for the child socially and otherwise. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think we put too much pressure on our kids socially in that respect. And we ought to just, like you just said, sit back a year. You got, you know, 1 year is not going to kill you in your educational, you know, journey.
Yeah. I mean, we did this with my youngest son when he was 5 years old, and we were trying to decide whether to send him to kindergarten. And like a lot of parents, and frankly, a lot of upper middle class parents, we decided to, quote, redshirt him for a year. Now, that's happening with a lot of boys. And you can understand why. You know, he still wasn't super mature. He was having some issues in his preschool. We said, let's give him another year. And he's doing great. You know, it's really a hard issue to study, you know, because the kids that end up getting redshirted, you know, might have other stuff going on. But it seems to be fine. You know, we've heard some people have been out there saying we should do that for all boys. I don't know about all boys, but I think what we should do is we should be willing to give kids who need it that extra year. Do it, you know, delay the entry to kindergarten, or just, you know, add another grade to elementary school if you need to. You know, I would think in New Orleans, you could say every elementary school in New Orleans, instead of, you know, it goes from kindergarten to fifth grade, add an extra year in there so that they have more time. What does it matter? Okay, all those kids will end up graduating high school at 19 instead of 18. Fine. You've given them an extra year, though, to master this stuff so that when they get to middle school, they're ready to hit the ground running. When they get to high school, they're ready to succeed in those tougher courses. Instead, we play this catch-up game all the way through.
I read the report, Mike, last night after I watched, you know, all the speeches at the DNC. And right away, I was like on page 4 or 5, and I recognized, you know, I didn't hear much talk about education at either convention, mm-hmm. quite frankly. And it kind of mystifies me. And I don't know if this is just too complex or what it is, but this is where a lot of our primary focus ought to be, right? I mean, you know, mm-hmm. and it may not be that it's going to take a lot of extra dollars. It may just be we need to put the dollars in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case or not?
I agree with you, and it's really depressing. You know, there was a time, I remember the 2000 campaign, you know, between George W. Bush and Gore. They had a debate, and I'm spending something like 10 minutes talking about education. It was a big focus of both conventions that year. Hardly anything this year. You know, the Democrats don't want to do anything to make the teachers' unions mad. In fact, both union presidents had marquee speaking slots last night. The Republicans are just talking about throwing money at parents, you know, with these education savings accounts, which, hey, I'm for school choice, but we got to worry about whether or not kids are, you know, learning, whether parents are using that money well. So the Democrats want to throw the money at the public schools, and the Republicans want to throw the money at the parents. Meanwhile, nobody is talking about accountability, improving teaching, improving the way we do reading. So, yeah, it's depressing. And I am hopeful that we can get back to the point where we put these issues at the top of the agenda again. Now, there's still some governors out there, state lawmakers, that are making these issues important. But at the national level, it's just zip.
You know, it's one of the reasons I focus on poverty, because this really embraced kind of my thought about, you know, fighting poverty. We have almost 40 million, I think we're about 41 million now, living below the federally identified poverty level in this country, right? Mm-hmm. And with the population migration and what's going on not only here within the states, but also what's going on with countries coming to this state, that problem is growing exponentially. But we don't have a response to it. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I don't see any connection between something that we are really on the leading edge of doing, addressing what is identified in this report to close that gap. Mm-hmm. Do you?
You know, the only thing, well, look, the one thing I would point to is you do have both parties talking about some kind of expanded child tax credit. You know, J.D. Right. Vance, at least, was talking about a $5,000 tax credit. Kamala Harris said, OK, I'll see you and raise you $1,000 on that, at least for infants. And look, it's expensive, especially if you provide it to everybody. But it would make a difference on child poverty. We tried that during the pandemic. It did have a big impact. You know, of course it has an impact. You're just, you know, it's automatic. You give people money, they're not as poor. And according to this study, household income, it matters. So, you know, that is something you can do. These other issues, though, are much harder. I mean, of course, one of the biggest issues is family structure. You've got kids growing up in single parent households. You know, not only does the single mom, it's usually the mom, right, have to try to make a living plus provide care for the kids. It's super. I can't imagine how hard that is, right? But she's only making one income. And so, not surprisingly, a lot of those households are below the poverty line. You've got two parent families, and they can provide both more support and parenting, but also more money. And solving that problem, it's hard. You know, we at least don't see it getting worse anymore, at least by most counts, but it isn't getting much better either. And that's even though we've had this huge decline in teenage births. We still see a lot of kids growing up in these broken families. So that's a tough one. It's a hard one for politics to fix. I think that's something that's got to come from some real cultural change.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, just so for the benefit of a listening audience, the stats, 58% of black students live in poverty. 56% of Hispanic students come. These are from the bottom three income categories, as reported in as placed in your report. Mm-hmm. And only one in five students, 19%, and 24% of Asian students. And then y'all make the correlation of Asians and whites and how they outperform, and you know, as it relate, or they're the ones that are widening that gap. And you know, again, I don't see this connection. Part of the problem, I guess, with the child tax credit, there's no guarantee that it's actually going to be spent on the things that you need to spend on your kids directly to really mm-hmm. make that difference. Mm-hmm. You know, reading to your kids, buying books for your kids, or any of those things, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. Now, I think there was some evidence from the pandemic that the extra money that went to poor families back then, that they did spend it on things that you'd want them spending it on, including some of those things for their kids directly or for food. But that's part of the debate we should have. You know, are we better off just trying to give people tax relief, support, you know, people who are working these low-wage jobs, give them some income support, let them decide how to use it, or should we do, you know, more food stamps? And maybe this education stuff, we should have some kind of tax credit or voucher for enrichment activities, so you can have your kid go to tutoring after school or sign up for the local soccer team. I mean, these are things we should talk about. I guess it depends, you know, how much you want to lean into trusting parents and families to make their own decisions on these things versus making sure the money actually goes to the kids.
I was also surprised by the gap between two parent households and one parent household by race. 93% mm-hmm. of Asian students, 86% of white students live in two parent households, only 48% of black students, and let's see, I think Hispanic students were, I lost the figure.
Maybe 75%, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, 79%, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 79%. You know, I had no idea that the gap was that large. From black to Asians, whites, and Hispanics.
Oh, it's enormous, and you know, it helps to explain some of the things that we're seeing. Oh, I still got you.
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, it helps to explain some of these things that we're seeing because, look, you've got, you know, we say, okay, why is it that the black-white gap might be growing, but the white-Hispanic gap is not? And one of those reasons may be that because, you know, so many more Hispanic kids are growing up in two-parent families. So, you know, that's another form of disadvantage that black kids are dealing with. That's just so much greater. You know, my own sense is that the Hispanic kids, by and large, are doing okay, and they're going to be okay. You know, as their families are here generation over generation, they look more and more like other Americans. You know, my Italian ancestors, it took them a few generations, but, you know, now our family's doing great. You know, that's going to happen with Hispanic families as well. You know, the progress has been much slower, unfortunately, for black children, and you got to point to the black family as one part of that. We have just got to figure out how to have some real cultural change so that that fewer kids have to grow up with just one parent.
It was interesting, too, how this most recent study really kind of embraced a lot of the outcomes of that study 20 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it really has not changed much at all, you know, and that's sobering. I mean, look, the study 20 years ago, there had been some good news at the time, which was that that the achievement gaps had closed somewhat, some of the opportunity gaps had closed, that the 1990s were a really good time in terms of reducing child poverty, especially for Black children. That was showing up. But we haven't made as much progress since then, and especially in the 2010s. And then, of course, the pandemic has just been a complete disaster. So we've got work to do. You know, I mean, I think the message has got to be that progress is possible. We have made progress at times in this country in driving down child poverty and in narrowing these achievement gaps. But we got to get back to the things that work.
Yeah, it's going to be and again, going back to, we're just not on the national level. We're not talking about it. You know, we have one party wants to get rid of the Department of Education, another one that's pushing back on it. But not anybody really talking about real solutions here, right? I mean, it's just kind of frustrating. And, you know, I guess one has to ask, and I'm going to have you back on. What role does the, because we run out of time, but I'm going to try and get you back on next week. And I want to talk about what role does the DOE actually play? And are we getting the return on that investment? And what is it that they're doing? I think it's a conversation we ought to have. Because, you know, interestingly, mainstream media is not asking these candidates about it. And, you know, they're not even talking about it. It'd be interesting to hear your take on that. So we'll contact you and hopefully you'll be available for us next week. Mike Petrelli, it's always a pleasure to have you. Always a pleasure to have you on. President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute and visiting fellow for the Hoover Institution. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me on.
All righty, we'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join MIDI. mintmobile.com.
You spend over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
The Saints are back in town, and they take on the Tennessee Titans this weekend, and Mike Haas is back to the humidity, sweating like a pig. Welcome back, Mike.
You sound like my wife. That's kind words. The poor pig has returned. And you know what? I was expecting, you know, oppressive heat that was just unbearable. And it's hot, don't get me wrong, but I think we caught a break. It hasn't been nearly – the first day back, it was cloudy all day. And yeah, I haven't seen a cloud in a month. So I was like, okay, let's ease them back into this. And it really – it's been bad, but I know you guys suffered far worse than what we have right now. For June and July.
Well, you should take credit for the moderate humidity that we've had since you returned.
Well, you know, I'm not running for office or anything like that. But, you know, your vote would be appreciated. Yes, we did bring the cool and less humid air back.
Absolutely. So the Saints have done some interesting things since they got back. They played at the Tulane Stadium the other night. I don't know if you had a chance to visit that. I was kind of curious how that went.
It went very well. I think, you know, it was a nice evening, and they practiced at Tulane, and it gave the Saints team, first off, an opportunity to be outside, you know, kind of acclimate themselves back because they just had gotten back at, you know, dawn on Monday. And kind of ease your way in. And really, from the fan standpoint, it was a kind of a lighter practice. And they had been hungry to see this team because they had not seen it really at all because of the training camp in Irvine. So it was a really, really good practice. And the way that it was scripted from a practice standpoint towards the end, prior to the Charlie Smith show, kicking field goals, was kind of this two-minute drill that you got really kind of this competition on the scoreboard, minute 48, down by four, here's, you know, and you really kind of felt like you were not just at a practice, you know, team against team, the same team. It was really well done, and I felt like it was just the right amount, and they were in shells. Nobody's getting waylaid, which is the way it should be. But it was a very solid practice for coming back. And then, you know, when you get into the Charlie Smith, you know, episode, where we're just kind of watching, and we weren't really, I'm not saying we weren't paying attention, but we were doing a 3-hour radio broadcast from the press box, and we kind of had glanced down with Deuce and Bobby. And he was, you know, kicking like 45 and 50 and 55 and 60. And then we were on the radio just like it was play-by-play. Like, this was like, here we are, this is happening right now. Charlie Smith is lining up for 60 and then 65 yards. And the 65-yarder was just unbelievable. I mean, Bobby hadn't seen Charlie Smith kick before. And it was, you know, he was the next Morton Anderson and the Hall of Fame and – but it was an impressive – he just booted this kick on the same hollowed ground, if you will, from 65 that Tom Dempsey had made, you know, from 67, right, you know, 64. And it had probably 10 yards to spare. I mean, it landed in the net. It didn't just barely cross the cross. It landed in the net. And so it was – I just think like that kind of atmosphere was perfect to welcome the team back, and really for the team to welcome the fans back, because they have not. I mean, when you practice every day, you're just hitting up against some guy and nobody's watching you on the sidelines. I think they were appreciative of having the fans back as well.
Absolutely. I think this weekend, is it the 50th anniversary of the Dome? this season?
No, it's our 50th anniversary begins in August of 2025. So this is technically August 3rd. We're in it, our 49th year. So
49th year.
Okay. But in 2025, so this I've always prefaced it like this. In 2025 will be our 50th year, because I fully believe that when the Super Bowl is here on February 9th of 2025, even though we will not be a 50-year anniversary, it will be treated 100% like it is our 50th anniversary. But the beauty of that is that we will have the Super Bowl in 2025, and then on August 3rd of 2025, we begin a year of celebration here at Caesars Superdome. Into 2026, we'll have events that kind of pay honor to some of the events that they had decades ago, and really kind of celebrate this building and its relationship with the community from August of 2025 to August of 2026. So that's really kind of a neat aspect of it too. But yeah, it's an anniversary, but it's a long anniversary that we'll be celebrating.
So Mike, I know that you've been chronicling the what's going on at the Dome. I know you're one who takes a lot of pictures, and you've seen the Dome from the inside out now as they've gone through their renovations. I believe you're there right now.
I am.
It's got to be pretty exciting for everybody to have their first football game in the new facility. For the most part, almost everything's done, right? I mean, is it almost finished?
We're an airport, right? I mean, we're always tinkering. We're always trying to better the experience. The punch list is like 16,000 deep items. But no, we're open. I'm walking the east sideline right now. Fans are in for this open practice. And, yeah, we're done. We've already had Zach Bryan here with, a full load. The markets are open. The atriums are open. And that's where I think from a fan standpoint. Now, if you're a brand-new fan, it's all new. But if you're a fan last year and you were on the east side, the Champion Square side, you've seen a lot of this. Now, it's our fans on the west side, the Metairie side, because I have a neighbor. He's, where are these renovations you've been talking about for years? And I'm like, it's coming. Bro, be patient. Because that side is finally going to see what we've been talking about all this time. And it's, ramps gone, I've read this, and it's a perfect way to kind of explain what has happened to this Superdome, that we have reclaimed more than 100,000 square feet of now usable space. Wow. And we didn't touch the exterior of this building one bit. We did the iconic image of this landscape of the New Orleans, skyline is just the same as it was from any direction. But inside, it is completely gutted, if you will, bigger concourses, open, airy, sunlight coming in. And I think and people can move around. You're not just ushered in wherever you have to go the way the crowd goes. Now you've got walking lanes, a 40-yard bar on either side. I mean, is that New Orleans, right? Two 40-yard bars on both sidelines. And I tell people all the time, I say, you come to these games now, come early because, there's construction around the Dome. There's things happening. But just come check it out. Explore. And I've never said that about a stadium. But come explore and see all of the new things that's there. Get to your seat and figure out where it's going to be, but explore around. There's so much, and I'm here every day, and I go, I didn't know that had happened already. So it's really, really neat, and we're kind of watching it too for the first time. We've never had the whole building. We are training staff here and workers here. They've got to go help fans to their seats and understand that escalator you've taken for 30 years, it's not there anymore. It's not that we're not letting you on it. It doesn't exist. And so everything is a little changed, right? But it's changed for the better. And, I think it's going to be really fun. And we're still September 8th. right? Carolina is September 8th. We got time between now and then. Game on Sunday with Tennessee. That'll be the next. It's like an evolution, just checking off things, right? Practice, preseason game, Carolina. And before you know it, you know, Taylor Swift, Super Bowl, Saints and the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I've got a text here for the audience. All of the outside ramps still exist that go up to the different levels, right?
Yeah, there's all the outside ramps on Poitras that take you up to Gate A. There's also some escalators on the outside, and there are ramps that have never been touched. If you come in Gate A on the Poitras Street side, those ramps are still there. And if you come in Gate E on the Smoothie King Center side, those ramps are still there, haven't been touched. So, and people are. They love the ramps here. I get it. So we've still got them, just not on the sidelines, East Champion Square and West Gate G Metairie.
I remember participating with my kids and others, and as a young adult, too, playing touch football on those ramps.
Right. So, believe me, you know how many times I've heard that story? I've heard that story from everybody, and I get it. I, you know, the ramps are great. You know, I've got pictures of when the ramps were these bubble tiles. I've got pictures of the ramps in carpet. I go, carpet?
Yeah.
We've carpeted the ramps. And so, you know, that's why I'm very happy. Not, you know, as a fan, one, and as the media relations manager for the Superdome, that we still have the ramps at Gates A and E.
Yeah.
We still have them for football for the next generation.
All right. You got a few more minutes. We'll go to a break. Come back to you.
Yeah, as long as you don't mind me hanging in the concourse with everybody, you know, getting their hot dogs and beers, I'm good.
Not at all. All right, we're going to come back to Mike Haas after the break. Stay with us. Voice of the New Orleans Saints. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Mike, number of players on the bubble. What is kind of the timeline now as we go into this last preseason game?
You know, it's to me, and I know we've talked about this before, I feel like it's players. And I also feel like it's the team deciding how many I'm keeping in each specific player group.
Yeah.
And so, you know, are they going to keep 5 wideouts, 4 wideouts, 6 wideouts? How many DBs, you know, offensive line? We know how vulnerable that position is and how vulnerable, you know, how many guys you're going to need throughout the regular season. So I think what will happen, you know, certainly, today's a practice more than anything else. Sunday, I don't know how much we'll see of the first teamers for that game, but some, I would imagine, some players, not sure for how long. And then by Tuesday, then the Saints usually do it a little ahead of time, but by Tuesday, 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Central, you know, your roster has to be down to 53. And some of those guys, there's a new rule this year, because you would try to, maybe if a guy was injured, you would kind of release him, but then bring him back and put him on IR. And so now the NFL actually lets you, on cutdown day, take a guy and put him on IR, and he has to wait for 4 games to come back. But it's kind of it was a shell game before. Now it's not a shell game. It's just they've realized it's happening. Let's just make it legal, make it the right way. And then they'll create their practice squad a day after that. But I'm, you know, from the people I talk to, and there's a lot of veteran players, 6, 7, 8, you know, years of experience that are going to get released from other teams, more so than probably years past, as each year, you know, these teams try to get younger. They try to save money by using my draft class. And I feel that the people I talk to, there may be 4 or 5 players going to be added to this roster after the 53, you know, during this kind of cut-down period, and teams release players that make the Saints better. That's a veteran offensive lineman, maybe, a veteran running back, veteran wide receiver. I feel like most of the changes feel like they're going to be on offense, but, you know, a safety from a defensive standpoint, you know, you don't know. But I feel like the question marks right now are offense. And so that's kind of a change, if you will, is that you think about this team cutting to 53 in the practice squad to go, well, wait, we got four or five maybe new members of this football team. So I think that's really the question moving forward. What does it look like? What does this team look like heading in to Carolina? Because I think you're going to see it's going to be different after, you know, the cuts and practice squad than it is right now, and maybe even more different than we anticipated the 53 being, just because there's quality players out there, and, you know, this team needs depth at O-line, receiver, running back. Maybe tight ends. You don't know. And I think they're always – they don't get probably the credit they deserve, the Mike Parringtons, the Mickey Loomises, Jeff Ireland, Kai Harley, about how aggressive they are to always tinker and try to get better, right? I mean, that's not me. I don't – you know, I'm not promoting them, but they've worked very hard. This team brought in a ton of free agents in 2024, a ton. They didn't have any money to really go after the big, but they always are trying to get better. And so that's put to the test starting September 8th.
Yeah, it's going to – I agree with you. I think the next 2 weeks are going to be very interesting to see what happens. I wasn't aware of that rule change, but that really changes the dynamic, right? I mean, it changes
just allows
it in a big way.
Right. It just allows you to say, look, I don't have to – pretend to, you don't, you know, that we're going to do this for one day and I'm going to come back and then I can put you on IR. You know, it's just, you know, two guys you can put on IR on cut down day, and they're going to have to miss 4 weeks, but you don't have to go through waivers. You don't have to do all this, you know, kind of right. Left hand, not knowing what the right hand's doing. So, you know, it's certainly helpful. And it's just a question of where this team goes. We'll know pretty soon, in the next 4 or 5 days, where this team feels its challenges are, right? Yeah. When they start signing players from other teams or guys who were let go, and that what position did that happen, you know, it might signal that that's an area of concern, or that there was just a chance to get better. It's kind of like the draft, right? You take the best player available, or I need help at wide receiver. Well, I'm not going to take the 18th best wide receiver when I got a shot at the second best linebacker. And that may be the situation. Maybe they didn't sign a defensive tackle or defensive end, who knows, but where they're pretty strong. But I just feel like this team, it will be significantly, that's probably too strong, noticeably different, right, as we head into the Carolina game, that roster, than it is right now.
The NFL chessboard game. It's always an interesting game to watch, for sure. Mike Haas, have a great time this weekend. We'll be listening to you. I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thanks for allowing me to take the tour while I was talking to you. And if you can make it to the open practice, if not, we'll see you on Sunday.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks, to check in with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot. Stay with us. Ian Hook is in for Scoot. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Good afternoon, Sheriff. We're going to start out with JMC Analytics pollster John Cuvion. We're going to talk about Kamala Harris's post-convention polling. We got 74 days to go. We'll see if the honeymoon lasts. And at 3:10, we're going to talk to the Scoot on the Air Ukraine correspondent, Matthew. He's back in the States, and we're going to talk to him about the Kursk incursion and more. Good show. Good
stuff. All right. Ian's up next. Stay tuned, folks. We'll see you again Monday. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Mike, number of players on the bubble. What is kind of the timeline now as we go into this last preseason game?
You know, it's to me, and I know we've talked about this before, I feel like it's players, and I also feel like it's the team deciding how many I'm keeping in each specific player group. Yeah. And so, you know, are they going to keep 5 wideouts, 4 wideouts, 6 wideouts? How many DBs, you know, offensive line? We know how vulnerable that position is and how vulnerable, you know, how many guys you're going to need throughout the regular season. So I think what will happen, you know, certainly, today's a practice more than anything else. Sunday, I don't know how much we'll see of the first teamers for that game, but some, I would imagine, some players, not sure for how long. And then on by Tuesday, then the Saints usually do it a little ahead of time, but by Tuesday, 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Central, you know, your roster has to be down to 53. And some of those guys, there's a new rule this year, because you would try to, maybe if a guy was injured, you would kind of release him, but then bring him back and put him on IR. And so now the NFL actually lets you, on cutdown day, take a guy and put him on IR, and he has to wait for 4 games to come back. But it's kind of it was a shell game before. Now it's not a shell game. It's just they've realized it's happening. Let's make it legal, make it the right way. And then they'll create their practice squad a day after that. But I'm, you know, from the people I talk to, and there's a lot of veteran players, 6, 7, 8, you know, years of experience that are going to get released from other teams, more so than probably years past, as each year, you know, these teams try to get younger. They try to save money by using my draft class. And I feel that the people I talk to, there may be 4 or 5 players going to be added to this roster after the 53, you know, during this kind of cut down period, and teams release players that make the Saints better. That's a veteran offensive lineman, maybe a veteran running back, veteran wide receiver. I feel like most of the changes feel like they're going to be on offense, but, you know, a safety from a defensive standpoint, you know, you don't know. But I feel like the question marks right now are offense. And so that's kind of a change, if you will, is that you think about this team cutting to 53 in the practice squad to go, well, wait, we got 4 or 5 maybe new members of this football team. So I think that's really the question moving forward. What does it look like? What does this team look like heading in to Carolina? Because I think you're going to see it's going to be different after, you know, the cuts and practice squad than it is right now, and maybe even more different than we anticipated the 53 being, just because there's quality players out there, and, you know, this team needs depth at O-line, receiver, running back, maybe tight end. You don't know, and I think they're always – they don't get probably the credit they deserve, the Mike Parringtons, the Mickey Loomises, Jeff Ireland, Kai Harley, about how aggressive they are to always tinker and try to get better, right? I mean, that's not me. I'm not promoting them, but they've worked very hard. This team brought in a ton of free agents in 2024, a ton. They didn't have any money to really go after the big, but they always are trying to get better. And so that's put to the test starting September 8th.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the next 2 weeks are going to be very interesting to see what happens. I wasn't aware of that rule change, but that really changes the dynamic, right? I mean, it changes
just allows
it in a big way.
Right. It just allows you to say, look, I don't have to pretend to, that we're going to do this for one day and I'm going to come back and then I can put you on IR. You know, it's just, you know, 2 guys you can put on IR on cutdown day, and they're going to have to miss 4 weeks, but you don't have to go through waivers. You don't have to do all this, you know, kind of left hand, not knowing what the right hand's doing. So, you know, it's certainly helpful. And it's just a question of where this team goes. We'll know pretty soon in the next 4 or 5 days where this team feels its challenges are, right? Yeah. When they start signing players from other teams or guys who were let go, and that what position did that happen, you know, it might signal that that's an area of concern, or that there was just a chance to get better. It's kind of like the draft, right? You take the best player available, or I need help at wide receiver. Well, I'm not going to take the 18th best wide receiver when I got a shot at the second best linebacker. And that may be the situation. Maybe they didn't sign a defensive tackle or defensive end. Who knows? But where they're pretty strong. But I just feel like this team, it will be significantly, that's probably too strong, noticeably different as we head into the Carolina game, that roster, than it is right now.
The NFL chessboard game. It's always an interesting game to watch for sure. Mike Haas, have a great time this weekend. We'll be listening to you. I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thanks for allowing me to take the tour while I was talking to you. And everybody, if you can make it to the open practice, if not, we'll see you on Sunday.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks, to check in with Ian Hoke, who's in for Scoot. Stay with us. Ian Hoke is in for Scoot. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Good afternoon, Sheriff. We're going to start out with JMC Analytics pollster John Cuvion. We're going to talk about Kamala Harris's post-convention polling. We got 74 days to go. We'll see if the honeymoon lasts. And at 3:10, we're going to talk to the Scoot on the Air Ukraine correspondent, Matthew. He's back in the States, and we're going to talk to him about the Kursk incursion and more. Good show. Good
stuff. All right. Ian's up next. Stay tuned, folks. We'll see you again Monday.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Hey, fantasy football owners. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.